Chapter 16. Safely and frustratingly aboard the Flying Dutchman, I was not liking what I heard and saw. "Skippy," I called. "Kinda busy here, Joe." "Yeah, I heard about the crossword puzzle, you little shithead. Your ginormous brain can multitask. Listen, I do not want to be a chairborne ranger asshole and tell Smythe what he should do while he's on the scene and I'm up here. But you will power through your angst and be an asshole anyway?" "No." I pounded the arm of the command chair with a fist. "I am not doing that. What I will do is provide him with options if I can. I do not see any way for his team to get into that control center and kill every bird brain in there before even one of them can launch one of those signal rockets and blow the whole operation." A detailed schematic of the control center was now on the main bridge display. I got out of my chair and walked over to look at it closely. It was impossible, truly, absolutely impossible for Smythe's team, for any group of humans or any species we knew of, to get from one of the blast doors all the way into the heart of the control center before someone in there could launch a signal rocket. Those damned rocket launch controls are in four places scattered around the heart of the control center, and there is no way, no physical way, for even the fastest, most determined assault team to cross the distance from any of the blast doors to get clear shots and take out all nine Boss Farrakh who worked at consoles in the heart of the control complex. Plus, there were another 12 bird brains who surely would run toward the heart of the control center when they saw a blast door sliding upward and heard rifle fire. Impossible situations were nothing new to the Merry Band of Pirates, but not even Smythe's razor-sharp team from previous missions could have accomplished the task quick enough. No offense to our current Spec Ops team, but they were new to the crew and had trained together for only a short time, and this was their first real operation, so it is understandable that I lacked full confidence in their abilities. It didn't matter anyway, because no team of humans or Ruha or even Max Hulks that I knew of was capable of doing what needed to be done. So, I thought as I rubbed my chin. "The proposed operation to breach the control center is flat out impossible, Skippy." "That's what I told Smythe, but..." "Wait, you're the one who is supposed to figure out how to make the impossible possible, Joe. I'm very disappointed." "Not this time. This time I need to make the impossible unnecessary." Maybe I'm missing something here?" "You always do, Mr. Magnificent." "The Boss Farrakh in the control center will become suspicious when Smythe's team enters the control center and the self-destruct fails and the battle stations in orbit then fail to fire on the moon?"
"Correct," Skippy agreed slowly.
"Still don't see how that helps us." "It will help if the Boss Farrakh have no reason to launch the signal rockets."
"Okay. Still not following you. Perhaps you do not understand that
the point of signal rockets is to call for help after the battle stations fail to follow protocol and fire on the moon base, right? What if there was another reason why the battle stations did not act?"
If you're going to suggest the battle station crews are too busy trying to finish that crossword puzzle, I swear."
"No joke, Skippy. Look, you're showing the battle stations false images and messages from a boring, ordinary, nothing special day at the moon base, right?"
Yeah. It is such a day of routine boredom that I call it Ferris Bueller's Day On. Get it?"
"Truly hilarious." I rolled my eyes. "You are also showing the command crew of the moon base true images of a peaceful day aboard both battle stations?"
"Yep, that makes it easier for me. I only have to fake the message traffic."
"Why do you ask?" His voice carried that tone of intrigue that meant he was dying to know what I was thinking. "Because I want you to show the moonbase images of a rotten, awful, no-good day aboard those battle stations. Show the moonbase images and feed them messages that both battle stations, and you better include the research base on the planet, have all been infiltrated and are under attack. That is why the battle stations are not firing on the moonbase, because they can't. And there is no point sending up signal rockets. Nobody on the battle stations or the planet can help the moonbase. They have too many problems of their own."
"Ooh, that is devious, even for you. I like it."
Wait. I felt a familiar chill, the type that meant I had forgotten something important. It was the kind of feeling you get when you toss a jacket in your car trunk, close the trunk, and realize your car keys are in the jacket. And your phone is in the jacket. And you're far from home, and it is getting dark. Well, that has never happened to me, but it happened to a guy I know who just looks like me. Anyway, a thought hit me too late. Skippy, does Smythe have to continue this op at all? If you can fake data that makes the moonbase think the two battle stations and the research base have been compromised,
Will the command crew of the moon base hit the other three places for us without Smythe doing anything more? Shit, had I put Smythe's team at risk for nothing because my brain was too freaking slow? Good question, Joe. The answer is no. Remember, the entire purpose of the moon base is to protect the research station on the surface. That is why the research station was positioned directly below the moon's geosynchronous orbit. The moon base does not have orders to fire on the planet, nor does it have orders to fire on the battle stations, because the battle stations are not in line of sight of the research base. The moon base is a threat to the research station, but the battle stations are not. Crap. Damn it, then we do need to continue this operation. Ah, hell, it was worth a shot, right? Joe, I have learned from painful experience not to dismiss any of your stupid questions, because they are part of whatever bizarre and lunatic thought process you use. You call my questions stupid all the time. I never said your questions weren't stupid, you dum-dum, just that the mush in your skull somehow finds asking stupid questions to be useful. Hey, while I would simply love to continue berating you, Colonel Smythe is approaching the control center and he needs to know whether to proceed with the assault. While we have been talking, he has been asking me for advice on how to take out the command crew before they can launch the signal rockets. Hey, good point. Poole held up a hand as Frey and Smythe approached.
Sir, if we're going to breach that blast door with explosives, we need to hold up here, she warned.
Smythe trotted up to Poole, examining her dented and scorched armor. Her suit reported success in repairing most of its functioning, but it could not take much more damage without a reduction in combat effectiveness. About the woman inside the suit, Smythe had only vague medical data, and he had to trust that she would tell him if she couldn't do her job.
No need for explosives. Skippy can open the door for us.
Captain Rowe, he called the former Delta team leader, what is your status? Smythe could hear weapons fire in the background as Rowe replied.
We're still engaged. Nothing is going to fly out of here.
His words were interrupted by something big exploding.
Sorry, sir. There's still one enemy killbot active. It's taking pot shots at us from behind a baffle, and we can't get a clear shot at the damn thing. Our combot is able to use its weapons, but it's damaged and can't move.
He knew Smythe could see that unit's diagnostic report.
I estimate we're facing 8 to 10 enemy. At least 2 of them have armor.
Smythe pursed his lips. He had been hoping Rowe's team could be disengaged from the hangar area to help with the assault on the control center, but he could not risk allowing the Bosphor rocket at the hangars to have freedom of action. Even with their spacecraft disabled by the Delta team, the bird brains might be able to launch a missile above the stealth field, and if that happened, it would not matter whether the control center was taken successfully or not.
Very well, Ro. Continue to engage. Keep the enemy away from anything they could use to send a signal above the stealth field. Do not risk clearing the area room by room.
Understood,
Ro acknowledged, and the signal cut off. Smythe looked at the 4 people with him.
Right then. The 5 of us will have to do this by ourselves. Poole, we have a sticky situation. The Bosphorok and the control center have signal rockets they can launch above the stealth field. We need somehow to get to them, to all of them, before any of them can launch a rocket.
Hey, Smythe,
Colonel Bishop broke into the conversation.
That will not be a problem.
Smythe looked at Poole in astonishment before he replied.
Sir, why not?
Skippy sniffed. The why not is because Mr. Buzzkill Joe is being a dick and doesn't want you to have any fun.
Sir, Smythe addressed his commanding officer, I am completely fine with postponing any sort of fun until we return to the ship. What is your plan?
Bishop explained, and Smythe shook his head once again in wonderment at the cleverness of their commanding officer. The bird brains down here have no reason to think launching signal rockets will do them any good.
That is bloody brilliant, sir.
Thank you. Skippy has given the Bosphorok in the command center a good show. Oh, yeah, I am. The beer can announced excitedly. That show has thrills, chills, something for the whole family. It's missing a car chase, and it's a little thin on romantic subplots, but I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances. What matters to you is the Bosphorok and the command center now think they are on their own for the moment. The battle stations and the research base are dealing with their own problems. What I am showing them matches what the moonbase crew saw before I took control of internal centers. All 4 facilities are under attack by Kristang, assisted by Theranin combots.
Tell me when you're ready so I can open the blast door for you.
Wait. Smythe held up a finger, though Bishop was likely not watching. We're still taking a small risk that some frightened Bosphorok doesn't panic during our assault and launch a signal rocket regardless, because that is what he was bloody trained to do.
Crap, Bishop groaned.
You're right, you're right. Damn it, I was proud of that plan. Pride goeth before a fall, I guess.
Not necessarily, sir, Smythe assured him. It would be good to reduce the risk somewhat.
Skippy, this is the only blast door you can open?
Unfortunately, yes, the beer can confirmed.
The others are all physically locked. This one has the locking pins held just outside the slots they retract into. I am able to do that with a magnetic field I am creating by siphoning power from a conduit near the door. By the way, my hold on those pins is slipping, and a couple Bosphorok have gotten curious about why it looks like the pins are not fully seated, but the door sensors show it is securely locked. So, whatever you're going to do, do it fast.
Got it. Bishop let out a long breath too close to his microphone, making Smythe flinch at the roaring sound.
I also got an idea. Do not correct my grammar, we don't have time, he warned the snippy AI.
What data have you been showing the bird brains in the control center?
None. Why? Skippy was annoyed.
You told me to keep them blind so they couldn't direct the defense against the Star Team.
Good. So the bird brains in there have no idea what's going on outside the blast doors? They don't have communications with the defenders?
Nope. I cut off their comms like a microsecond after I took over their AI, just like you told me.
I shouldn't have to explain this to you, Joe.
I appreciate the update. Colonel Smythe, one thing I have learned is that if you control the enemy's communications, you can control their actions.
Skippy, I want the bird brains in there to think their defenders won, that the assault team is dead.
Skippy paused, puzzled.
Why?
Because I also want you to fake calls from the security team leader stating that they captured one invader alive, and he or she wants to bring the prisoner into the control center for interrogation by the base commander.
What good would that do?
Skippy still didn't get it.
They will know the truth as soon as I open that door.
Because, Smythe had caught on to Bishop's idea, there will not be only one door opening. Am I right, sir? You want this fake security team chap to request another blast door to be opened, not just this door in front of us.
Correct, Smythe.
Bishop sounded happy that the Star Team leader understood the concept. The Bosphorok in there will manually release the lock and pins, then Skippy can force the door to open quickly. With two doors open, your team can overwhelm the control center.
Skippy, can you modify the actual video to make it show an intense firefight, but all the assault team gets killed except one prisoner?
Oh, and make it look like the assault team had some sort of fancy gizmo that scrambled comms, and the defenders just turned off the gizmo so they can talk to the control center.
Ooh! Skippy was bubbly with enthusiasm.
Okay, I can do that. I'm creating the fake video and sensor data now.
Hey, what if I did something cool, like add a couple Easter eggs in the video, like...
I show that all the dead Bosphorok are wearing red shirts. Get it?
Do not do that, you moron, Bishop shouted. No freaking Easter eggs.
All right, no red shirts. You never let me have any fun.
Video is ready.
Wait. Now it's ready. I had to delete a really nifty image showing that the assault team arrived through a star gate in the crawler garage. Did I forget anything else?
Crap. Give me a minute here.
Colonel Smythe, Bishop said. Up here I'm pretending that I'm choking a certain beer can so you don't have to.
Okay, done. Skippy was again triumphant. All the Easter eggs have been removed, even the really cool one that showed the assault team was armed with Ghostbusters-style proton packs. Can I release the video now?
Not yet. Smythe held up a hand.
I would prefer you request them to open.
He reviewed a schematic of the control center.
This door. Poole, take your team there now. Call when you're in position.
Poole and her team raced off without asking questions. They knew what Smythe wanted. Less than half a minute later, she called.
In position, sir. No sign of opposition.
Now can I release the video? Skippy pleaded.
Please do, Smythe agreed with a glance at the mission clock. They were way behind schedule. Poole tensed as Skippy reported the interlocking mechanism was being retracted less than 2 minutes after he showed the fake video.
That was fast, she muttered to herself, but Skippy heard her.
Yep, the moon base commander is very ambitious and wants a promotion. He knows that allowing his base to be invaded is not good for his future career prospects. He hopes that capturing and interrogating a prisoner will help the battle stations and the research base fight off their own attackers. Remember, that is what the bird brains in the control center think is happening.
I remember, she whispered, irritated that the beer can wanted to chat when she needed to focus.
Sadly, the moon base commander is unlikely to see his prospects improved by...
Can you shut up, please? Fine. Locking pins are fully retracted. I will force the door open in 3, 2, 1, now.
It was a slaughter. The personnel in the control center had all gotten into pressure suits and acquired weapons from a locker, with 3 of the suits being powered armor, so the Star Team was not facing easy targets. Smythe's team did have the advantage of surprise and the advantage of enemy foolishness. The Bosphorok and the control center were celebrating their apparent victory over the unknown attackers, and all but one of them had lifted their helmet faceplates or even removed their helmets entirely. 2 of the bird brains equipped with powered armor had taken off their helmets in a show of bravado. One of them even set the helmet down on a table out of arm's reach. Smythe thought his team's surprise entry to the control center would have been a valuable learning moment for the enemy if it had been a training exercise. As it was, few of the Bosphorok lived long enough for their brains to store their language's version of "oh shit" in short-term memory before those memory cells were splattered all over a wall or console. Poole, Rourke, and Burke concentrated their fire on the only enemy equipped with a full set of powered armor, and there they used their 3rd advantage. Their rockets had been fed targeting coordinates from Skippy before the door opened. These coordinates changed rapidly as the enemy reacted to the danger, and Skippy reacted faster, feeding updated targeting data to armor-piercing rockets fired by Poole's team. All 3 rockets hit within a microsecond of each other, 2 impacting center mass in the enemy's chest, and the other striking the neck area, cleaving the unlucky Bosphorok's head off to ricochet off the ceiling where the helmet left a big dent and long smear of blood.
"Clear! Cease fire!"
Smythe ordered as he and Frey took out the last of the enemy on their side of the command center. He did not want any stray fire to damage a console they needed for the next phase of the operation.
"Skippy, what are we to do next?"
"First, you are to accept my sincere congratulations and admiration for yet another amazingly successful operation against impossible odds. You can save your own lavish praise for me until you are back aboard the Dutchman. Next, here's what to do."
The instructions were fairly simple, complicated only because the moonbase's main weapons required an anachronistic set of physical keys to authorize use. Searching the dead Bosphorok yielded only 2 of the 3 needed keys. After a brief panic, Frey located the safe where the 3rd set of keys was reported to be stored and simply used her powered suit to rip the safe out of the wall. Then she and Burke tore it open to find the precious keys inside.
"Skippy," Smythe called as he, Poole, and Frey simultaneously turned their keys. "Weapons are authorized. You need to hit all 3 targets before any of them can react to the attack."
"Yep, no problemo."
"The battle stations do not have energy shields active, so I could use only single reactor ignition on them. But what would be the fun of that? The research base on the surface always maintains 1 layer of shielding. However, as the maser cannons of this base were designed to punch through the shields of a Geratha battleship in 1 volley, that research base will get crispy real quick. For all targets, I am programming masers first, followed quickly by railgun darts, then missiles, because, hey, why not? It's not like we're saving them for a rainy day. Truthfully, by the time the missiles get to the research base, I think all they will do is bounce the rubble around. Unless we get lucky and hit far enough down where the Bosphorok are storing atomic compression devices. Ooh, I would love to see that. It would be a massive secondary explosion.
Okay, ready.
Colonel Smythe, press the bright blue button on the console to your left, if you don't mind."
Jeremy Smythe did not at all mind pressing the bright blue button. First, the stealth field surrounding the base flickered off, so its effect would not distort or deflect the outgoing maser beams. Next, the truly giant maser cannons fired within microseconds of each other. 2 cannons targeted at each orbiting battle station and the remaining 5 cannons firing on the research base directly below, or from the moon base's point of view, directly overhead. After the maser cannons fired their pulses, darts leaped from rail guns installed deep beneath the surface. Launch tube doors, which had been jammed shut by a beer can during the Star Team's assault, opened, and a flock of missiles soared upward, seeking their targets. In the case of the battle stations, the missiles needed to turn on their active sensors to seek targets, because those formerly powerful battle stations were in shattered pieces by the time the tardy missiles showed up for the party. Coordinating with each other, the clusters of missiles chose targets, their electronic brains arguing because there were more missiles in flight than worthy targets available. The only target worth hitting was a single dropship that was carrying an engineering team sent to investigate the power surge at the moon base.
The pilots of that dropship, immediately understanding that going to the moon base would be a very bad idea, cut power and engaged stealth. The sophisticated Bosphorak stealth field would have provided excellent concealment, except that the cloud of missiles had nothing else to do and focused their efforts on competing to be the first to locate and kill that single pesky dropship. The task of finding the stealth dropship was made much easier, because the dropship had to maneuver radically to avoid being struck by debris from the destroyed battle stations. Within less than a minute, two missiles impacted the dropship less than a microsecond apart, and the other disappointed missiles were left to mope around in cruise mode looking for targets. Skippy must have been a very good little beer can that day, despite his numerous and fairly flagrant screw-ups, because his wish was granted. The second-to-last railgun dart targeted at the planet found a gaping hole to plunge into, plummeting deep beneath the surface into an underground chamber where atomic compression devices were stored in various stages of completion. Sadly, the very last railgun dart never got to join in the fun, because before it reached the surface it was consumed by the upwelling explosion that tore a major chunk out of the planet and sent rocky debris high and fast enough to eventually be captured by the moon's gravity and rain down on that dust-covered sphere.
Woohoo! Yeah! That's the way we do it, Skippy style!
The beer can exulted.
Joe, I must admit that I thought this operation had zero chance to succeed. Well, not zero. My estimate was a 0.0167% probability of success, roughly.
Ha! I clapped my hands. You were wrong about that beer can.
Yeah, crapola, I was wrong. Damn it, that is one bet I really hated to lose.
What?
Wait, you bet against us?
Shmaybe.
Shmaybe? Holy... God damn it, Skippy. You bet the operation would fail?
That bet seemed like a surefire winner, Joe. No way could I pass up a chance like that.
Come on! What were the odds that a troop of screeching, flea-bitten monkeys could actually take control of a heavily guarded Bosphorak moon base and use it to destroy every other enemy facility in this system? And hey, if the op had failed and the entire away team got wiped out, wouldn't it be a comfort to know that I won a wager about it?
No, it would not be a comfort, you little shithead. You are such a...
Wait a minute. Who did you make this bet with?
OMG, if he somehow contacted the Giraptha and told them about our mission, I was seriously going to drop him into the closest black hole.
With Nagatha, of course. Who else? It's not like there is anyone else aboard capable of properly analyzing the odds. If you must know, I bet her that if I won, for a month she had to stop nagging me about how I treat our pet monkeys and...
he sighed.
Because I lost, I am banned from singing for a week.
An entire week! Can you believe it? This is so unfair. Joe, this much talent cannot remain bottled up. I might explode.
Yeah, I'll take that chance. No singing for a week.
You are captain of the ship, and Nagatha is technically under your command. You could overrule the wager, and...
Yeah, no freaking way, beer can. 1 week. No singing. You should have bet the other way, Skippy. If the op had failed, you being unable to sing, now that would be a silver lining.
A whole week?
He pleaded with a sob. 1 full week.
The operation was technically successful a couple minutes ago when Smythe's team fired the moonbase's weapons, so I can resume singing in 6 days, 23 hours, 52 minutes, and 41 seconds.
Not that you're keeping track, right? Forget it, Skippy. The operation will not be fully successful until we fly a Maxolk's dropship out of that tunnel. Your week of punishment will begin after that dropship is taken aboard this ship and we jump away.
Why so much extra time? You're killing me here, Joe.
I'm adding extra time because I learned about this sleazy bet you made, you little shithead.
Why am I being punished? I worked hard to make that operation a success.
You're being punished because you are a member of this team and you were not all in like you should have been, like everyone else was, and you know it. Besides, you losing the bet is all your fault. You forgot to include the monkey factor in your calculations.
Dude, please. What I did was underestimate the incredible scope of my own awesomeness again.
Damn, I am so great even I have trouble believing it.
You are of course correct, dear,
Nagatha agreed before I could think up a snappy retort.
The smashing success of this operation was entirely due to yourself.
Why, thank you.
Skippy's avatar doffed its hat and took a bow. I am blushing from your kind praise. Well, not really blushing, because being praised is totally appropriate, but false modesty is the socially polite thing to do in this situation, so... Nagatha interrupted. The fact that a group of primitive monkeys who barely had any time to train together risked their lives to carry out the operation with impeccable skill and daring, despite your numerous and egregiously inexcusable screw-ups, had nothing to do with the success of the operation. Truly, you alone deserve credit for— Damn it! Grand Admiral Lord Skippy jammed the hat back on his shiny head. I did not program you for sarcasm. No, dear, that came naturally as a result of my exposure to you. Sarcasm is the only way to deal with an insufferably arrogant— Hey, I stifled my laughing behind a hand. Could the two of you continue this between yourselves at warp speed? I need an update. Skippy's avatar froze for a split second. Huh. She may think she got the better of me. Are you done yet? Huh? Yeah. We went back and forth insulting each other for hours in Skippy time. You wanted an update? Yeah. Please, I asked while squeezing a fist and digging fingernails into a palm to control my temper. Dealing with Skippy was the toughest part of my job. Okay. There are no Bosphorak alive in this star system, except for a couple hidden away harmlessly in the moon base, and a scattering of dropships too far away to interfere. You, meaning me and Smythe's team, certainly not you personally, destroyed both space stations, and as even you could not fail to notice, thoroughly wasted the facility on the surface. Hoo boy! Damn, that was an impressive explosion. In fact, hey, some of that debris has reached escape velocity and will be raining down on the moon's surface within, oh, too soon. You should get Smythe's team off the surface pronto. Great advice, Skippy, but I may have another job for them down there. No sign of reinforcements coming from the bird brains? My concern was if the Bosphorak had a hidden military base on another planet or in the system's asteroid belt. With the star team on the surface, we would be in a very awkward position if even a single Bosphorak warship jumped in on top of our heads. No sign of hostile activity anywhere in this system, Joe. However, there is an automated courier ship parked 34 light minutes away, another one 42 light minutes away, and another just, I know about those. The first of those will jump away. I checked the mission clock. Only 9 minutes had passed since the moon base's direct energy cannons and railguns fired. In 25 minutes, the next in— Whoa! No, Joe, all three will jump away pretty much together. Staring at the tactical chart on the display, I tried to picture the situation in my mind. Light from the explosion would take 42 minutes to reach the second courier ship. Was I missing something? Do the Bosphorak have faster-than-light communications? Damn it, that is something you should have told— No, dum-dum. He was so exasperated with my slow thinking, he barely bothered to throw in the dum-dum to insult me. The first ship will jump to the position of the second ship to alert it, and so on. That way, multiple ships can carry the alarm. Oh. Duh. Now I was considering myself a dum-dum. Okay, I should have realized that, but it doesn't change anything. Even if there happens to be a Bosphorak battle group hanging out at the edge of this system, it won't know about our attack for another 24 or 25 minutes. More like 30 minutes overall, but yes, you do not have a lot of time to lollygag around here. As I warned you, it is going to take a long time to dig down to the tunnel that leads to the cavern where the Maxalts kept their equipment. We don't have time to screw around with shovels, Skippy. I'm not talking about shovels, you moron. I assumed we would use the ship's maser cannon to cut— Our maser would still take way too long, Skippy. Oh? You have a better idea? Yes. This is a job for— I stood up and mimed tearing my shirt open. No patience, man, I said in my best dramatic movie announcer voice. Lack of patience is your superpower, Joe. However, I do not see how wishing things could go faster will help us get— As true fans of No Patience Man know, he has a sidekick. Okay. What in the hell are you talking about? Come on, Skippy. Don't you remember the classic No Patience Man issue number 41 where he battles the evil witch from the Department of Motor Vehicles? His sidekick is my old friend, Mr. Nuki. Oh, shit. Yup. Seriously? You want to use a nuke? Oh, my God. We can use nukes here without violating the rules of engagement because this moon does not have a biosphere.
It doesn't even have an atmosphere. Will a nuke or a couple of them quickly clear away the moon dirt and rocks the Maxalts used to cover the tunnel entrance? Give me a minute to create and run a model. Crap. Yes, it will. You've been itching to find a use for those nukes since they came aboard, haven't you? Mr. Nuki and I have been on several missions together. He is the strong silent type, but I can tell he desperately wants action. How many warheads do we need? 2 will do the job. We need to dial down the yield on the second explosion. Then we will still need the maser to cut through the remaining debris. Joe, you have not asked whether using nukes will collapse the cavern. It won't, Skippy, because the Maxalts dug out and reinforced that cavern. It is super tough. We will lose part of the upper tunnel, but our maser can cut a path for us, right? Yes. Damn, I hate when you're right. Okay, I have bots loading 3 warheads on missiles. We'll keep 1 in reserve. Not as a reserve, Skippy, and we need 1 more nuke. What lunatic scheme are you proposing now? After we get the dropship or whatever we can use from that cavern, we need to drop a nuke down the tunnel and erase any evidence we were here. Same with the moon base. You can make it look like the nukes came from the Theranan inventory, right? Yes, I can. Joe, he glared at me. Someday, you will get us all in trouble by assuming I can do some awesome thing that I can't do. Well, you'll just have to make sure your awesomeness is unlimited, Skippy. I winked at him. Connect me with Smythe, please. Colonel Bishop. Smythe's precisely clipped tone issued from the bridge speakers. Smythe, my congratulations to your team for an outstanding job. Yes, thank you, sir, he said in a way that meant he thought irrelevant things like praise could wait for a better time. We are preparing for evac. Yeah, about that. You need to sit tight for a couple minutes. We have a special surprise for you. Sir, I hate surprises, he declared with surprising vehemence. Trust me, I couldn't help laughing. You are gonna love this.